Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. I am Dr. Michelle, and you are walking with me on this road of life, Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4 is our phone number. Text or call. You can get the app from iTunes. You can stream us online, breadboxmedia.com. You can also log on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com and see, scroll over to the right, see all the old podcasts, the archive podcast. Most of there's all the other contributors as well. Almost everything that I have talked about over the last year or so that we've been Breadbox Media, the topics don't really get old. They go from relationships and personal journeys, troubles, abuse, medicine. It's all there. So I hope you're doing well today. You can also email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. And you'll have to excuse me. I still have this little cough that's going on here. So we'll see if I can make it through this program without without coughing, even though there's a mute button. I don't always push it. So yesterday we were talking about those 9 habits to a happier life. And I didn't finish reading them to you, so I'm going to finish today. And why am I doing that? I started off the week convinced that I was going to respond to an article that a listener had asked me about from Psychology Today on 9 habits that cause bitterness or something like that. And as I said yesterday, when I was frantically looking, I kept over an hour. I was looking at anybody who was referring, I was Googling anyone referring to that article, because I thought, well, maybe someone reprinted the article, maybe some newspaper reprinted the article. There were so many references to that article, and yet each one was just a tiny little paragraph, and then they led to read more, and then it led right back to Psychology Today. And for some reason, Psychology Today website was, couldn't get on it. It just said something like it was overloaded or just try back later. So it led me to look at the other links in my Google search. And the other links, many of them were 9 steps to happiness, 9 tips to this, 9 tips to that. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to go with that. I want to address to you the very things that you could be doing that can increase your chances for increasing your unhappiness and your bitterness and your angers and your resentments. However, I'm led to a different place right now to look at the antidote of that. In other words, if you have been bitten by a rattlesnake and you've got the venom in you and you know it, I would rather look at how do we get the venom out and how do we heal you up at this moment in time than to give you a dissertation on how you ended up in a situation where a rattlesnake bit you. I hope that makes sense to you. But I do want to go there. I want to do the prevention. Let me also address that oftentimes, especially we as Catholics and or Christians and or religious who have in us the knowledge or we have the advice given to us that forgiveness is key, that bitterness is poison, that anger is a sin. We look at that and we think, oh, we just shouldn't have it. We don't understand that all those things are part of a process. So there are times, anger. I had a priest tell me yesterday, anger is a natural instinct. It isn't a sin. It is not bad. It's a natural instinct. Now, once the natural instinct occurs, it's what you do with that that can be sinful. And if you live out the process of that anger in the natural instinctual form, he didn't quite, I mean, this is what I'm getting from what from our talk. If you live out the process, that's still natural. It is the nature God gave you. You have instincts, and those instincts are self-protective, and they are automatic. So your anger and your thoughts of revenge or your thoughts of harm or whatever it is a natural. It's as if, we'll take the rattlesnake again. You see the rattlesnake, and it's coming at you, and you know it's going to, you don't get a chance to outrun it. You have to think, how am I going to, it's them or me. How am I going to do that? How am I going to get out of this alive? And you start looking around for ways to scare it off and or, if that doesn't work, to kill it before it kills you. We have to have that. We wouldn't be here. There would have been nobody left to make us. So that's just the way we were made. And it's a beautiful and important way. So think about that in your own life for a second. Where are you in that process? If you've been, even if it's been a year, just like people with grief, somehow we are instant people in this society. We think that once we make a decision, or once somebody dies, or once we have that miscarriage, or once we do that, I keep going back to abortion because when I use that as an example, because a lot of you have had them. And Pope Francis is, I mean, the Catholic Church actually has been very good at trying to reach out with Rachel's Vineyard, if you all don't know Rachel's Vineyard. But I do kind of use that as an example because I have dealt with a lot of people that have been in that situation, and they get so harmed and so stuck by their own decision. They have that decision, and there's nowhere for that grief, that anger, that hurt. And let's say they were pressured either by a boyfriend, sometimes a husband, sometimes their own life. Sometimes they're in an abusive situation, a parent. Many a Catholic parent, I've talked to many a woman who was brought up in a Catholic household, who's one parent. Imagine how you would feel. One parent says, you must have an abortion. You cannot have this baby. There's no way you can take care of him. And then the other parent says, no, that would be a sin. You can't do it. And they don't see the conflict that is visiting upon the child, even though the child might be, is an adult enough to have engaged in an intimate situation, or been forced into an intimate situation, or as many people that I've worked with who've been drunk or whatever, and you know it's very difficult. So this is not about that abortion, but I do bring that up because I want to put that in context, that there are no secrets from God. There are no secrets. So there's no place when if I talk about something and it might be rather light on the scale of 1 to 10 of things that could hurt you or of things that you shouldn't do, I might bring up something that seems relatively benign, meaning harmless. But I want you to know this includes everyone. It includes soldiers who have killed when they didn't need to kill and or liked it. It includes people who have been criminals. It includes people who have made very bad choices in their life and let's say they ran into alcoholism and end up harming their family. There's by no way an excuse in any of that, because as Maya Angelou said, you did what you did, but now that I know better, You did what you did when you knew that was all you knew to do. Now that you know better, you do better. And that's the whole message of the resurrection and the whole message of Easter and the whole message of redemption, the whole message of Catholicism, even though it seems to get really bogged down and you don't think that's really the message. There's a lot of hellfire and damnation out there. Well, no, everybody wants others, hopefully good meaning people want everyone to get their soul reunited with their creator. And sometimes we on earth think we have the answer exactly, and we know how to say it. Well, we may have an answer. The truth will set you free, but we may not know, we may not ourselves not even know the truth. How often do you get blindsided? How many jokes do we have to make about not seeing the red flags about a bad relationship or trying to teach your children about red flags and tip-offs of cons and ways that other people lure, seduce, and otherwise harm you? So give yourself a break here, but know that there is a process getting back to the whole concept of bitterness. And in this program, we're going to finish those 9 habits, 9 steps that will lead you to a happier life. As I said yesterday, you can Google that, and there's people like those little magic numbers. And when I read it to you on purpose, the not so magic significance of symbolism in the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church loves symbolism. Very important. Symbolism makes everything I've said to you today almost as symbolic. I talked to you about symbolic relationships and symbolic patients and people who, you know, I put conglomerations together of people that I know to give you an illustration. This is all talking in symbols. We might compare a hawk or a political situation to our personal life. This is all symbolic speaking, and the church has with it reasons why it uses certain numbers. But the number 9, just like the number 7 or the 3 steps, it catches us. It's catchy. But these will be, you'll find many of groups of 9 things to make you happier. But these are pretty cool. So we're going to talk about those on the other side of the break. You can email me, dmlive@redboxmedia.com, and we will see you on the other side of the break. This is Dr. Michelle.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle. You're with me on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4. Text or call. They can instant message me as well if you want to say something over the phone. Have it relayed to me. My email, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. So before the break, we were discussing this concept of 9 habits, why we use these little sound bites, these little catches every time we see 3. I love the 3 tips, 3 steps to perfection. Well, that's great. Give me 3. I can handle 3. 7 is also great. Lots of 7 steps to 9 steps to. Those are very, those numbers are not used for just randomly. You rarely see the 13 steps to something. You might, but it's kind of, you usually don't see that. So that was a little aside on numbers, and I've always find it fascinating to find out why the church has such rich symbolism and such symbolism that you can't even imagine. You just can't even imagine things that you take for granted, that there's actually a symbolic purpose. Like, why are there pine cones? And I know people take, like, I think there's something in the Vatican or the Pope's staff or something, or somewhere, they have like a pine cone, and there's all kinds of weird conspiracy thoughts about some truthfully or some demonic situation. But the reality is a pine cone has always been a symbol. This is an ancient church, remember. I'm getting way off topic. But this is an ancient church. We're talking 2,000 years And it came from a history for thousands of years before that. Christ was a Jew. So there's, you know, all this rich history, which at that point where people lived on the earth, from the earth, and to the earth, and that was their knowledge. There were no airplanes or construction crews or machines or cars or radios, or nothing was ethereal. There was God, there was the earth, there were rules, there were feelings. It was very I won't say it was simple, but there were just things that they didn't have to deal with that we do now. So it's the symbolism, and as I was going to say, the pine cone has a beautiful symbolism throughout history and in the Catholic Church itself, and it's of strength and resisting throughout all time. The pine tree resists the strong winds. If you look that up, and maybe I'll do that on the other side of the break just for fun, but it has beautiful symbology, very ancient. Okay, so talking about making sure that you understand that if you are in a situation, just like with grief, you don't have a time limit. Some people seem to be able to have something happen. They have their feelings about it, and then they have their reaction, and then they go on fast, relatively fast, what seems to be fast. That's neither right nor wrong. You who take longer, or you who go down a million different roads, that's not right or wrong either. We do have a thing in psychiatry where we look at these things and say, well, now there are things that are called complicated grief or complicated PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, that if they continue to cause a dysfunction in your life year after year after year after year, then we have to really take a look and say, well, maybe you need some help here. So again, we do not diagnose or treat on this program. It's for just to open us up educationally, spiritually, physically, all different ways, and try to let those pieces of your own individual puzzle come together. And in doing that, we nourish it and water it and hydrate it with scripture when we can, or teachings of the church when we can, the spiritual, because that's our hydration, it's our irrigation system to keep us going, it's our sunshine, it's what keeps us going, oftentimes whether we know it or not. So yesterday I had come across in my Google search, as I told you, something from a gentleman who was a contributing author from Inc.com. And he was listing the seven habits to a happier life. Seven habits that people have that will bring them a happier life. At the same time, we also mentioned and looked at a woman who had nine habits for a happier life. So a lot of people have nine habits that can change your life. Now, one of the things that this gentleman spoke of was looking forward, greeting the day with an expectation of something wonderful. And that ties in perfectly with what we talked about during Lent, with opening your eyes and praising God, praising Him, praise His name always. That starts your moment, whether you're feeling it or not, whether you open your eyes. Those of you who have had some tragedy or something that's haunting you that you've done, even if you've confessed it, or you're going through a divorce, or you don't know what to do, you're just finally admitting to yourself that you're in an abusive situation, or you're finally admitting to yourself that your child is really into something bad that you know is going to be harmful, and it doesn't get off your mind. That's natural. But you wake up and you praise Him first, because that just automatically says, I trust you, if you praise Him. And that can set the tone for your day. And you can wake up and expect something wonderful. It may not be the wonderful thing that you wish for, that you think will happen. I think I told you, I prayed for years for a healing of the family tree. And the family tree, as I knew it, fell apart. So it's like, oh, well, is that, well, you know, I mean, I wasn't really that tongue in cheek, but when I look back on it, I think in the wisdom, in his mercy and knowledge of all life that will come from long after I'm gone, I pray for a healing of the family tree. It falls apart. Well, now, what did I do? Maybe I walked down the wrong path a certain way, or maybe I didn't do X, Y, or Z, but the fact is I am where I am. And I have to believe, and I do believe, I don't have to believe, I do believe it. Praise him, praise him, praise him. There are things that were unseen, that some things I knew about, some things I didn't. But that really had people that were showing their stripes. And that's just the way it is. So sometimes you pray and pray and pray, and you have an image in your head. We used to think about that with people who had loved ones in very dire situations that most likely, again, I say most likely, you never know, but most likely were not going to come out well. And their idea of what survival meant, and our knowing pretty much what survival meant, were two different things. Because there's just some things you can't know, you hope for. So if you're in that process where things are just so tough, or you just are so in the dark, and you just feel so wound up, what is right? What is wrong? You think you're going to go a certain direction in your faith or in your church, and then boom, down comes something, and you think, I just can't deal with this. I cannot deal with this. I really don't believe this. When I was traveling, I did meet with a priest. I met with a lot of priests, probably more in the last week than I have in the last 6 months. But I met with this great young priest who is also a chaplain, I think, or a pastor or a priest to some of the military. And but he's not a military priest. He's not in the military. And he's really wonderful, very down to earth. And he said, you just go into Mass and you just show up. And if nothing else, whether you don't feel it, you're not believing it that day, you're not getting it, you show up and you just say, I'm in a battle and I'm taking this time out to sit here with you for a minute because I want you by my side. I want you with me when I do this battle. I want you by my side. And no matter what, just that act is an invitation. And that's faith. And he said, then you let God do the rest. God will do the rest. But you're in at that moment just going, you know, I really don't even get it here. I actually don't want to be here today, but I'm here. Kind of the thing, remember, in the Passion, can't you just stay awake an hour? He said to his apostles when they were all asleep and he's sweating blood. So God is basically saying that to us. Can we not be here an hour? So we look at it and say, okay, in the scheme of things, we don't want to be overwhelmed. That was something else that this gentleman talked about yesterday. You look at the reality. You feel overwhelmed by the huge mountain in front of you. So look at something that you can do and take care of that. And it's if you don't have a strong faith, or if you feel so overwhelmed, or you've been so hurt or crushed, or you are so at a loss to what to do when you're finding this stuff out with your children, whatever your situation, you lost a loved one or losing a loved one that you just cannot bear to let go of, what do you do? We're going to revisit that on the other side of the break as we dive into these 9 habits and 9 tips. I am Dr. Michelle. We will see you on the other side of the break. You can call 573-4BREAD-4. Hang there with us.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4. You can call, weigh in. Have you been having any particular situation you just can't let go of, and you're struggling, and you're feeling like, I know I need to let go of this anger and this fear and this resentment and, this bitterness and wanting to get back at the mother whose child just beat up my child? You know, is there something that you just can't seem to shake? Give a call, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me with the question, comment, or concern, or the way you've dealt with it to help other people. It'd be great to know. This is how I deal with this. So that email address is dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. So those 9 steps. This man, Jeffrey James, who is the contributing editor, a contributing editor for Inc.com, was talking about that the only measure of success is happiness. Now, let's not get hung up on that word. I want to put this as a spiritual happiness, an internal happiness, a mental health happiness, which means not lack of rumination, lack of always having it in your head, you're always batting it out of your head and it's always in the background noise of your life, like that irritating fan that you just, somebody finally turns it off and you just let down and go, oh, wow, didn't know that was bothering me. The peace, another great word for it, but sometimes we don't know what peace feels like. And so we want peace, but we don't get it. So just look at it then as a lack of the irritating noise, the dissonance, the out of tune guitar chord, all that. Just that's what will happen little by little. Those little dissonant things will start peeling off of your life like an onion without a lot of effort, because you're taking care of things. Basically what it turns out to be is the old AA core, basically, is that you're powerless over a lot of things. There are some things you are not powerless over, and that's your willingness. But you do not have control. And that's where we get all freaked out, because we keep wanting to have control. Now, it's a paradigm. We can't just give up and let, you know, the wind constantly blow us, which I have done many times in my life. But what we can do is say, I cannot control what happens here. I can do the best I can. I can be as guided as I hope I am. But I can't be in fear. And I have to do it a different way. But a lot of times when we tell ourselves what we can't do, it just makes us feel worse. You can't eat chocolate. You can't eat red meat. You can't eat this. You can't eat fat. You can't eat carbs. You can't eat whatever. It's fruit because it has pesticides. Well, pretty soon you just feel more shrunk. You feel more defeated than more empowered. Rather than saying, what can I do? What can I eat? Isn't this wonderful? I get to eat potatoes. I get to eat cantaloupe. I get to eat this, that. So we're looking at it from a place of abundance rather than a place of lack. And that's why I think I was probably led to see these places, these links, where I just, no matter how I tried, and really I tried about maybe 6 times, And I just couldn't get at it any way, even getting on Psychology Today website itself. I could not get on there and pull it up. For the looking at the ways to get bitterness or to stay in bitterness. But here are these beautiful antidotes. So let me recap quickly the few that I read yesterday, but then we're going to get into the rest of them. Anyway, this is from Jeffrey James. He talks about the small changes, which I like. And as I said before, that makes me, like, my ears perk up, just like my little German Shepherd's dog ears perk up when he sees something of interest. They just go boom, and there they are. You tell me it's going to be small, easy, doesn't take much time, I'm on it. If you tell me you got to work hard, you got to push on, you got to keep going, it must be so hard. The hardest things get harder because I already know that things in your life are hard. I already know that if you lose a loved one or you have a shock or you have something that you just don't know how to figure, you cannot reach that child with an eating disorder or you don't know what to do and you're just like, I can't wait for prayers, Lord. I need to know what to do now. Or you're so hurt from something that happened or you're damaged because you had a perpetration of some sort or a trauma when you were younger and you have nothing to do with it and the person got completely away and might even be a pillar of the community and it hurts. It's not a light thing to say, oh yeah, here's three easy steps. But the great part of that, the good news, is that those little teeny changes start to affect a big change. And really, if you liken it, I mean, how many of us haven't tried to lose a few pounds? I'm sure there are those of you who have not. But you look and you say, there's no way. I mean, I just don't want to go there. It's going to be too hard to take off 15 pounds or 20 or 30 or 40. And as I knew one woman one time who looked beautiful, but she was completely of pretty much average body build. She'd been way over 200 pounds. And she said, you don't understand that if you take off 50 pounds, you'd be in a hospital. If I take off 50 pounds and struggle and struggle and sacrifice to do that, I'm still fat. Nobody will even notice. I won't even notice. But what happened is something switched with her and she began to just do it really literally one day at a time. And within a year, she was, it was night and day from a size way over the 20s to down to a 12, in those days, a 12. They've changed the sizing now, but that's a pretty average size. So what are some of those little small changes you can do? Well, he outlines 9 of them. One was start each day with expectation, and that's expectation. He puts it in terms of, and he is a salesperson, so, you know, I'm thinking of the audience he's talking to, but something wonderful is going to happen today. But if we just put it in an expectation of, I praise you, and I know that everything that happens to me today, you will turn. Because for those who believe in you, and I'm praising you, and I believe in you, I know that you can turn water into wine, and you can turn anything that I'm going to face today into something good for those who love you. And that in itself, so I will expect that. I will expect something, some of your kindness. I'll look up in a tree, I'll see a hummingbird, or I'll see the sun for a moment, and I'll take a moment for that. And it will be great. Or I will also praise you that on my way to do all these things I'm so nervous about that I didn't make the wrong turn, or I could keep my mind on the road. So, but you wake up with an expectation that good is gonna happen. You take time to plan and prioritize, and again, you're overwhelmed, so you're not going to solve your daughter's eating disorder in a day. You're not going to be able to talk her out of it, but you can start the little steps. And what's the first step you've been afraid to do? Perhaps it's calling for help. Perhaps it's approaching someone that you were embarrassed to approach before because you didn't want to let that part of your family life into the world, but perhaps they have a family member with an eating disorder and you could ask them gently, how did that happen? How did you deal with it? What's going on now? Or you could start reading or Googling the situation. Just an example, give a gift to everyone you meet. And I told you yesterday about that little lady, no one even knows her name, who the guy who did go blind because of some macular problem he had in his eye. One of them was sudden. He may get his sight back, so we all pray for that. In his eye, he did have to have surgery, but he's in a hotel, a motel, and it's not a good one. And St. Vincent de Paul is helping him out in that, but he has dogs, and the owner's getting all upset because the guy can't see, but he can't to pick up after his dogs. And some woman who happens to live there, she's impoverished, or she wouldn't be living there, is leaving little cups of instant macaroni and cheese on his doorstep, and just without ever saying a thing, has picked up his dog poop for him. So, those are the gifts you can give. A smile is a gift. Looking up from your cell phone as you check out at Kroger or Ralph's or wherever you go shopping, that's a gift. Deflect partisan conversations. And when we get to the other side, when we get to the break, we will probably end right where we were yesterday when we ended the program. So we're going to get to develop these other parts in the last segment. Deflect partisan conversations. And that's about politics and religion. Because they really, when you're at head to head with someone, there's never a right. Are they going to say something to convince you? No. Are you really going to say something to convince them? No. Especially these shot in the dark Facebook people. There are those trolls out there. There are those people out there who feel alive when they're sitting in some dark basement somewhere eating Cheetos, logged on, getting up somebody's dander. And they really don't have a dog in the hunt. They just know how to push a button and they love it. That's their joy for the day. That's their interaction. And here you are biting on the hook. We're all like little bass. We want to just say our piece and get in there. But really, we're really talking to ghosts. That's a lot of wasted energy. We're going to get into that on the other side of the break and develop all the rest of the steps. So we're going to go back to all the way through those 9 steps to make you happier. This is Dr. Michelle. We will see you on the other side of the break.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You are with me on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, email dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can also buy the app and change your life. iTunes has it. So there we go. So we're into this 9 daily habits that can make you happier. And we left off on this number 4, which was deflect partisan conversations. And now, again, this is a person who's a salesperson. He's talking to his audience are people who chances are going to be reading Inc. Incorporated. So he's not a self-help guy. He's not a religious. He is a motivational speaker. But he does what he does. He's got his niche and he's got some good thoughts. These aren't the only 9, as evidenced by any quick Google search. There are many things out there that will help you lead a happier life. But all of them, when you look at them, they distill down to the KISS system. KISS system, which is keep it simple, stupid. I mean, really, that's what it is. When we start like building our little staircases and our mansions and our mental thoughts, and we travel, as my daughter-in-law, who's from Mexico City, often will call it when she was younger, she said, my mother's mind traveled in time. And what she meant by that is she was always worrying. She was always thinking about the bad things that would happen in the future and things like that. And so caring about her daughter, of course, but it's that traveling in time, because that was a great way to put it. it's traveling in time, and it's traveling in time to a place far, far away that does not exist. Now, you may be able to say to yourself, I know if it keeps going this way, this is what's going to happen. Some people are more intuitive than others, and sometimes it can be really troublesome. Some people are very concrete. There's not a right and wrong with that. We need it all in our world. But we need who we are. So if we are those ethereal, vaporous thinkers who have a hard time saying something succinctly, I'm raising my hand, also very intuitive, who can read very subtle things that they don't really understand they're reading, that can be very problematic because you're getting that dissonant chord inside because you're intuitive, but you can't put your finger on it. And that's where it gets tough sometimes, because you're perfect fodder for those people who demand that you be able to prove what it is that you're being upset about. And that can be a tough one too. So we're all different kinds, and there's the concrete thinkers. And for them, they have a very concrete, they only think so far, and they don't get hung up as much in what might happen in the future. It really doesn't bother them. They didn't learn how to overcome it because it wasn't a problem. If it is a problem for you, this is what we need to do. You go back to the KISS system. Keep it simple, stupid. That's what we do. And it's very difficult to do, because once your mind starts going there and you're already projected out, and you've already lived a life that tells you, last time I projected this out about buying that car and spending a little bit too much, and I'm making something up here that maybe you all can identify with, but where you are right now, you think you can afford this particular car, you buy the car and everything's going fine, but you really didn't. But what you really thought was, you know what, there's not a muff margin. And if three of these elements over here happened, we would lose the car. And maybe your spouse says, oh, don't worry about that. That's not even going to happen. But you just have this intuitive feeling that this just wasn't the right purchase. And you try to put all the thoughts on why that is. So if you're very intuitive, it's a really important thing for you to understand that you need to keep it simple. All right, so that really got off number four, which is deflect partisan conversations. It's about the religion and politics that we all tend to get into, and we feel like we are defending the future of mankind. Now, in some respects, of course we are, because how to defend a country under attack? If one person thinks it's right one way and another person thinks it's right the other way, or they're doing it for their own political advancement, man, yeah, you got valuable opinions. If it's about religion, if it's about faith, if it's about defending an attack on what your beliefs, certainly. But, pick your battles and know where you are with your battles, and where are you? Were you invited to a friend's house to meet their elderly family member, and their elderly family member is diametrically opposed to your feelings? Let it go. Or do you think you're really going to convince them, and are they really going to convince you? Your life and how you live it, or the fine, gentle, diplomatic and gentlemanly or gentlewomanly way of doing something different, still being there, showing with your life how your opinion is so different than someone else. That can be a really, really good thing. The other one, number five, was assume people have good intentions. And he says, since you can't read minds, you don't really know the why behind the what people do. Imputing evil motives to other people's weird behaviors adds extra misery to life, while assuming good intentions leaves you open to reconciliation. And so take that one to heart. You may be right on. You may have found those receipts and those online purchases and all these things from one of your children that leads you to believe they're sexting somebody and they're only 12. And it's your job to not just go, well, I have to assume the better and then pretend it doesn't exist. That's not your job. But you have to assume that they may be into something that perhaps they don't understand, or perhaps it's being perpetrated upon them. So you just kind of have to open up your heart a little bit. Or let's say something at work happens and every day someone says hello, and then for 5 days they don't say hello and they're all grumbly, and you think, well, they don't like me or I've done something, and you assume that they really want your job, but maybe they're just down, or maybe they got a bad diagnosis, or maybe they're just not in a good mood. So assume they have good intentions, you know, without being Pollyanna or don't be a doormat about it, but assume the intentions are good. Let them prove to you they're not good, and then you can reconcile. This number six is an interesting one, but it's true. Eat high quality food slowly. That does something to a person psychologically and physiologically. If you eat a lot of junk food, you're going to get bogged down. Your brain is going to get bogged down because your body's digesting things that overload it. It overloads the liver to have to break down too many carbs. If you get all this synthetic food and this processed food and fast food, it also causes a sluggishness because it has to break down, then parlay all kinds of stuff, including fillers and softeners, and some of the stuff even they find the same chemical that they use in yoga mats to keep them supple, they put in our bread buns. So, you know, those are the things we have to think about, why it's better to be healthier, be more natural, get down to that the stuff that grows from the earth. But also, at least once a day, try something you really love. You really love and savor it, even if it's one tiny bit of cheese, maybe it is a chocolate, something, an apple. Taste the bite and then marvel at this amazing thing that just fell off of a tree. That will also recharge you. It resets your brain. It resets your brain. It's like going back to default or getting out of a lot of different windows on your screen. It frees up the speed. It makes you speed through life better. Let go of your results. The big enemy of happiness, he says, is worry, which comes from focusing on events that are outside your control. We said that at the beginning. Once you've taken action, there's usually nothing more you can do. Focus on the job at hand rather than some weird fantasy of what might happen. Do the best you can. Pray first, do the best you can, and then let go of the results, because it's like a test. Once it's turned in, it's turned in. There's nothing you're going to do about it then, even if you ruminate, which I've had many tests I've ruminated over. I get it. Turn off background TV, he says. Many households leave their TV on, or music or noise, or people have things in their ears while they're doing other things. The entire point of broadcast TV is to make you dissatisfied with your life so that you'll buy more stuff. Why subliminally program yourself to be a mindless consumer? He's so right on. It is designed so that you don't like your life. It is designed so that you go get that antidepressant. It is designed so that you go buy that food. It's designed so that you go buy that toy. That's what it is designed for. So if you constantly have it pretending that it's just entertainment, and then you feel drained after you've done the dishes, there might be a reason for it. Exchange that. Exchange it for something that doesn't have that programming in it, that doesn't have something that's going to upset or depress you. The last one, we're going to be able to get to it, I hope. End each day with gratitude. Just before you go to bed, write down at least one wonderful thing that happened. It might be something as small as making a child laugh, or something as huge as a $1 million deal. Whatever it is, be grateful for that day, because it will never come again. And you know what I forgot to do yesterday? I forgot to do that very thing, because while in the grocery store, I heard the giggle of a little girl that sounded just like the granddaughter that I just visited. And I was at once missing my granddaughter, and I looked at the little girl, and then I started talking to her mom, and the little girl was showing me the little fruit cups she had. She was the same age, and she laughed and giggled with delight. And that really made my day. And then I forgot about it. I am grateful for that. So I am Michelle. And I'm telling you, I'm grateful for that in my day yesterday. So we will see you tomorrow with more adventures on our road. This is Dr. Michelle. Please email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can tell me anything. You can ask me anything. It could just be about medications. We are not going to diagnose or treat you, but we sure are going to give you the education and the guidance that we can. I am Dr. Michelle. I will see you tomorrow. God bless you. I fly, I fly.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.